This is The Annex, a sociology podcast. I'm Joseph Cohen from Queens College in the City University of New York. For more, visit theannexpodcast.com.
The item I want to talk about is the tax reform bill has the broad goal of eliminating deductions and lowering rates, which in general, most economists will tell you is good policy. It's less distortionary. Mm-hmm. But of course, the devil's in the details. It seems like it's not going to be quite as broad as 1986, where they really did eliminate most deductions and lower the rates broadly. It seems it's more targeted. And if you also get the impression that if you were to ask Paul Ryan what is best in life, his answer would not be the wind in your hair, the falcon at your risk, and the open step. It would be crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and hear the lamentations of their grad students. Because, you know, a lot of the eliminated deductions are laser focused at blue state, double income, no kid liberals. Where, you know, so you have the state and local tax deduction, you have the mortgage interest deduction, both of which are kind of aimed, a bunch of which wildly disproportionately benefit blue state Henrys, right? The kind of people we talked about before as dream hoarders. These kind of like people who are at the 90th to 95th percentile and live almost entirely in blue states, especially in big cities. Mm-hmm. Those are the people with really big mortgages. Those are the people who have who actually take advantage of the state and local tax deduction. And then among the more minor and petty ways that this tax bill would, you know, really stick it to constituencies who aren't exactly favorable to Ryan. And this one, I think, is actually less defensible as policy. I can see it both ways, but I think this is less defensible as policy than eliminating the state and local deduction or the mortgage interest deduction. I favor, for instance, capping the mortgage interest deduction at $500,000. I think that's good policy. But
it shouldn't even exist. It's a ridiculous law.
Okay, so you're more radical than I am, but but you can't eliminate it overnight. Anyway, but what we're really talking about is the proposal to count tuition waivers for graduate students as income for taxable purposes. Mm-hmm. Basically, all you need to know is that at a lot of schools, at most schools, the tuition waiver is between half and one quarter. I'm sorry, between half and three quarters of the total package.
Sorry, Gabe, when you say most schools, you mean most schools who are funding. Like, are most graduate students funded?
I think in the top 10, top 20 programs, basically all grad students are funded.
And you were talking about vast majority PhD programs, not terminal masters, right?
Yeah, terminal masters, nobody's funded. And applied fields, nobody's funded. So you're getting an MBA, you're getting an MPA, you're getting a JD, you're getting an MBA, you're getting a medical degree. None of that's funded.
Mm-hmm. I would leave it as an open question as to whether the majority of doctoral students, though, are getting funding at all.
Well, that's fair. But I think in the top programs, well, let me put it this way. I think you'd be crazy to go to graduate school without funding because it's kind of an iffy proposition, even if you do
Absolutely.
Have funding. But, you know, in the top 10, top 20 programs, the vast majority of students are funded. And at those programs, the tuition waiver is approximately half to three quarters of the total value of their package. So if you're making 20 grand on your stipend and tuition is another 20 grand for in-state tuition at a state school, then that's right. about half your package, which effectively means that it's going to double your taxes, actually more than that because of the way the deductions and brackets and things like that work.
Right. So like basically if your tuition is 20 grand and your PhD program waives the 20 grand, then the government is going to count that the same as it would a check of 20 grand going to you.
Yes. So if you're making 20 grand in stipend and you have a tuition waiver for 20 grand of tuition, you're only making 20 grand, but the government's going to tax you on 40.
Right.
And if you're going to a private school where the tuition is close to 40, and your stipend is 20, maybe a little bit higher, they're going to tax you on 60 grand, even though you're right. only making 20.
So what are people in the office saying about this? Because you're at a top-ranked doctoral program.
Well, we haven't discussed it yet, but, you know, I don't talk to people in the office as much as I do on Twitter, which, you know, why Leslie's so out of it. But, obviously people don't like it, right? But I want to kind of separate the extent to which, well, in what way should we consider it income? And also consider like kind of the counterfactual of like, what else could we do? Because I don't think realistically, so there's a few things, there's a few ways that universities could respond to this aside from saying, don't do this. Like, let's say that it passes tomorrow. There's a few ways that universities could respond to this, and figuring out how the universities would respond to it is actually kind of interesting. So the simplest thing to do would just be to raise grad student stipends enough to pay their tax bill. So you'd have to raise it by the amount that their taxes are going up, and then also raise it enough to pay the taxes on the taxes. Because, you know, if I pay your taxes, that counts as income for you, so I have to pay even more than that.
Yeah. Why even charge grad students tuition?
Well, that would be the alternative, right? The alternative would be, well, first let's deal with this, right? It's like, well, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That they'd have to raise. You know, and a lot of grad programs are already strapped. And I think that if you were to do that, it would have the effect of shifting graduate programs over to adjuncts and postdocs, where, you know, if you think about in terms of these are people who aren't just like, oh, we're providing the next generation of PhDs, but, you know, we're getting work done, which is part of the function of grad students. You could see people saying like, well, why would we hire a grad student rather than just hiring up an adjunct for teaching or hiring a postdoc for research? Because, you know, the bottom end of the postdocs is something like 40 grand. But you don't have to pay them tuition. And so that's effectively about the same rate as what you're paying a grad student already when you include the tuition waiver. And so, you know, if you had to raise the rates, raise the pay of grad students, but not raise the rate of postdocs because they don't currently have tuition, that would make it more attractive to hire postdocs for research. And then similarly, make it more attractive to hire adjuncts for teaching.
Well, I don't know. Oh, sorry. I kind of feel like it's, you know, it's kind of like asking, why do people have kids, right? They cost money. They take up your time, right? It's because you're going to take care of me in my old age. And I kind of feel like that's one of the reasons why you have grad programs, right? You are thinking to yourself, we want to reproduce stuff. And you can't have postdocs unless they were once grad students, right?
But then it's a collective action problem. So if it costs me a fortune to have a grad student, but it costs me very little to have a postdoc, and I can have roughly the same intellectual influence over a postdoc as I could over a grad student, and in particular, I could have this person help me by co-authoring, then it might benefit the discipline as a whole to have grad students, but it would benefit me to have a postdoc, right? So if I'm going to write my next grant and I have to budget an additional $4,000 for higher tuition, higher money for because they're going to be taxed on the tuition, and then I have to budget for the indirects on top of that $4,000. Now that grad student is going to cost me an additional $6,000 a year, and by that point, I'm much better off just putting a postdoc in my grant. It would be better for sociology as a whole if I had a PhD student.
But if you reduce the number of graduate students, then that means the cost of a postdoc is going to go up because you're going to have limited supply.
Oh, there's never limited supply. There's so many out of work PhDs. I mean, maybe in years.
Yeah. But. So first of all, that's very long run equilibrium thinking, and how long would it take to reach that? And second of all, we already have a glut of PhDs.
So there's a couple of things there. One, we already have a glut of PhDs. Unfortunately, the glut is probably largely comprised of people who are paying tuition, but also this tuition stuff, it's kind of like Macy's pricing, where like you take a $50 jacket, you charge $150 for it, and then give people a $100 discount.
Yeah.
You know, a PhD student is not like an undergraduate student. They're part worker.
Yeah.
You know, they're part faculty and they're part student. And it's odd that they would charge as much, especially since they are doing work and they are important to the production of output of the institution.
But, you know, so glass half full would be to say this could, in, you know, without anybody really intending it this way, it's not like they're sitting down thinking like, oh, there's this problem with the PhD glut. Let's solve it. It could end up solving the PhD glut, or at least ameliorating it, right? Maybe we already have too many grad students who then can't get jobs. And so if we have fewer of them, it would be better in the long run. even for the people who get rejected and then go do something more productive with their lives. And then the other way, okay, so, but let's put aside this option of just you pay the students more so that they can pay their, so they can afford to pay their now exorbitant tax bills, with the second order effect that you end up hiring more postdocs and adjuncts. The other option would be just like you said, it's kind of funny money. It's like, it's just like you said, like the example I would think of is, you know, Banana Republic, because it's like, in theory, a shirt at Banana Republic is, you know, $100 or $80 or whatever, but I've never paid that because I, every day I get an email saying 40% off. You know, so, it, you know, in reality, nobody ever pays that, or at least very few people do. And, you know, in, so why do they have tuition for grad students? And so, and kind of the solution you could imagine would be that they just eliminate the tuition. And just have it be that if you get in, tuition is free. And I think there's a few reasons they don't do that. One is because it's convenient to the university to have a nominal grad student tuition rate, because they actually do charge that to law students and MBAs and people like that. And that actually is the business model of a law school or a business school, is to charge tuition. And it would basically be a pain to explain to people if you had free to, you know, nominally zero tuition, you know, in reality, it's zero tuition for grad students. But if you were to make it nominally zero tuition for PhD students, but you're still charging $40,000 a year to law students. But even assuming that away, there is the fact that sometimes you can, you as a university can get somebody else to pay for it. So if your faculty have grants, you make them cover the tuition in the grants, which, you know, isn't really that common in sociology. It's not unheard of, but that's like par for the course in any of the hard sciences.
In the hard, doesn't it still incur a tax bill though? On the, they're still receiving a tuition waiver of a different sort, right? Like a grant is covering them, or they wouldn't charge the university, are you saying?
No, what I'm saying is that if you get hired, so the way that most of the hard sciences work is that the grad students get admitted to some part of somebody's lab. That lab is funded by grants. The grants include tuition support. You know, so like if I, if I was a chemist, I might write a grant for $5 million. And in that grant, I might have, say that I'm going to support 10 grad students. And I would budget for those 10 grad students $25,000 or $30,000 in stipend plus $25,000 a year in tuition waiver plus the indirects on top of that. And so the university is getting the tuition. It's just not getting it from the student. It's getting it from the National Science Foundation or the Department of Defense or something.
And then there are the few students who do come in with their own grants, right?
That's right.
And that money then just gets funneled like towards their tuition, right?
That's right. So like you don't really have a lot of these like lab style grants, but we know plenty of people who had like Ford fellowships, and Princeton got money from the Ford fellowship. It actually paid the tuition instead of it being this, you know, I'll pay myself a dollar kind of deal. Okay. Anyway, so it's like, universities like charging grad students tuition, even though if it's fairly nominal, because very often they can actually bill that money to somebody else. Yeah. And if they were to switch to this, they, you know, I feel like universities are going to be facing this dilemma of, do they have to raise a bunch more money to raise the stipend so that students can afford to pay their taxes, or did they, or do they decide to forego all this grant money?
The main thing I think about all this is that in the end, I'm wondering if we're worrying about something that may not occur. I say that because thinking more in terms of the tax policy side of it, they basically have to keep the debt from going over $1.5 trillion over X number of years. And I suspect that the first version of this is something that they did in order to not make it easier for people who are big supporters of colleges and universities and people who went to colleges and universities. I mean, because when you look through all of the sort of aspects of the tax bill, it's almost like if you're involved at all with colleges and universities, you want no part of this. There's the excise tax on large college endowments. There's the student loan interest rate deduction being eliminated. There's the repeal of the lifetime learning credit. If you're an employee, right? So let's say, you know, Gabriel, one day, you know, Leslie, one day, Joe, one day, your kids are going to go to college, right?
But one of mine is in college.
Okay, so there you go. So if they're at a college, so if they're, let's say they're at your institution or they're doing tuition exchange, right? One of the provisions, it basically will say, well, previously you were able to not have it considered taxable income if you got a tuition reduction, right? Now, a lot of people didn't know that. So it's amazing how many people didn't realize that, like, oh, that's a tax benefit. But it's a tax benefit when you're a professor and your kids go to college, particularly if you're in part of some kind of tuition exchange or tuition reduction plan, especially if they go to the same college that you're at. So you get this tuition discount. All that goes away under this current version of the bill. And so it's almost as if they've done everything in their power to basically say, hey, if you are highly educated, we're coming at you. And I don't know if that's I don't know what the story is behind that. Like, I feel like there's got to be a story behind that. There's lots of choices you can make, but it's like they picked off all of these list of things that would be disconcerting to folks who are in colleges, universities. And I have a feeling in the long run, from a lobbying standpoint, colleges, once they start to get their head around this and begin to realize all of these things together, they're going to focus, whether it be through associations or through their donors, to sort of push back on these things. And it's hard to say what's going to actually come of it.
This is such an American problem. Like, you take a public service that's like treated like K-12 education everywhere else on earth. You create this really complicated scheme where there's all these zany list prices and crazy discounts and tax loopholes and loan subsidies. And you get this really awful, complex, like Byzantine system where none of this would be a problem if you just socialize education like they do over most of the highly developed world.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I'm wondering the extent to which, if this does get passed in its entirety, there are already huge disincentives to becoming an academic, right? And going to grad school to get a PhD. I think it's going to really disincentivize it for people who grow up in low income, working class, and even just like moderately middle class households, right? Because what's the upside?
Assuming that people of modest means are the ones who are going to these top PhD programs, because I don't know about that.
But people of modest means wouldn't even consider it if it wasn't for the tuition discount.
Exactly, right? So I wouldn't have done it.
You've been listening to The Annex, a sociology podcast. For more information, visit theannexpodcast.com. Music is by Lena Orsa. Our production team included Anika Chowdhury and Liseth Moreno. On behalf of The Annex team, I'm Joe Cohen. Thanks for listening.